Hi, I'm Patrick, and I just ate at Honey Butter Fried Chicken in Avondale, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Yeah, thank you. Sounds delicious. I hope he was eating outside this week. We had a couple nice days, didn't we? I don't know. The weather's all, it's one day it's 80, the other, next day it's 50 and rainy. Thank you, Patrick. In any case, it does sound delicious. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is show number 657. I am your host, Mike Steven. Happy to be here with you, broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studio in downtown Chicago. What we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Be sure to say hello on Facebook and on Twitter. At Outside the Loop is the handle. Also on Instagram. And download the podcast of the show. If you don't do that already, it is free wherever you get your on-demand audio. We would appreciate that. Check out OutsideTheLoopRadio.com for the audio archives, all almost 13 years of them, and WGNRadio.com. We say good morning to Colin Seaman, who produces the show.
Hello.
Hello to you. And Don Kleppen in the newsroom.
Good morning.
Oh, Don, Colin, good to see you. We've got an action-packed show, as we are prone to do. Because later, we'll talk about some shenanigans in the Chicago City Council. I know that's crazy to think that there are shenanigans there, but guess what? There are. We'll check in with our pal Mick Dumke, who is a reporter at ProPublica, Illinois. Just a fascinating read and something we need to know about with the City Council, of course. Also, if you live in a township, there are about 1,400 townships across the state of Illinois, and Chicago Magazine writer Ted McClellan says, let's get rid of them because we don't need them anymore. What are townships? Stay tuned. That's the radio tease. Also, hey, you know what? There's this proposal to increase gas taxes, but also to increase the registration fee for electric vehicles in our state. We'll talk with the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board about just how nutty that can be. So that's all coming up on the show. So guys, listen to this. Speaking of city government, Carpentersville. Anyone here been to Carpentersville?
That is a negative.
Yeah, I don't really work with my hands. So
I see what you did there, Don. Well, they're lovely people down in Carpentersville. And this video was recorded in 2009. So 10 years ago. And it was at a city, like a Carpentersville Village Hall meeting. All the trustees are there. The board president is there. And normally those videos of city government, of local government, don't get too many hits. This one has 2.8 million views.
Whoa.
I'm going to give you a little taste of what was going on 10 years ago in Carpentersville. This is how city government should work.
President Sardo, the voters
I'll take
also,
the 96 to 6 vote every day of the week.
They also know of the double standard where your police report says you threatened to kill your wife, and this is misdemeanor. Now,
I was not charged with anything, Trustee Sigwald.
That's all right.
I was not charged. I was not charged with anything.
The question's been called.
And don't you ever defame me in public.
The question's been called. It's okay for you to defame me.
Unless you want to talk to my attorney.
Oh, please. It's okay for you to defame us, though.
No, I'm not defaming you.
The question has been called.
You guys are a disgrace.
Senior trustee, do I have the right to...
From the convict at the end to the woman whose son had sex with the convict's wife. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a town.
The question has been called, what is this?
What is happening?
That is glorious.
Uh-huh. And so that has 2.8 million views. That was 10 years ago. And the guy that recorded this, he no longer lives in Carpentersville. But I guess Carpentersville got in touch with him and they asked him, hey, can you take that down? Can you get rid of that? Because apparently it was hurting the image of Carpentersville.
You think?
Now, I don't think any of those people are still in office, but talk about action at city government. If every city hall meeting or village hall meeting, wherever you live, if it was like that, You could charge admission.
Oh, yeah. It's got a bit of a Desperate Housewives feel to it.
A little bit.
Very good.
All right. Well, I thought...
Don't give these politicians ideas, guys. Talk about charging admission. They're thinking, revenue?
Ah,
revenue?
Means more
we
people...
We want money.
Yeah, right. Not everyone will know what we're up to if we have to charge admission. All right, we got a lot to do. That is, that's kind of like the off-the-air banter here, isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
And Colin, the convict behind the glass.
Yeah, the airing of dirty laundry.
That's exactly what it sounds like
when
everybody's listening
off
to commercials.
Yep, it's pretty constant.
Hey, let's do that right now, shall we?
In these mellow dreams, I saw paradise.
And the local music that we are enjoying on this week's show comes from the band Warped Wonder. This group started off in college, and they say that they are, check this out, DeKalb's baddest indie fusion band. I love that description. You can actually listen to some brand new music from Warped Wonder. This album is called Growing Pains. It's out right now. Check them out online, warpedwonder.bandcamp.com. Each week, I love to feature local music right here on this program. So if you have any, feel free to go to outsidetheloopradio.com. Send us what you got, and we'll try to get those on the radio and the podcast, those songs for you. Each week, I love to feature local music. And this week, hearing some jams from Warped Wonder. If you think the Chicago City Council is up to some shady financial activity, you're absolutely right. And there is so much information out there to prove it. Mick Dumke is a reporter at ProPublica, Illinois, and this week he released an investigative piece he wrote called At Chicago City Council, Committees Are Used to Reward Political Favors and Fund Patronage. You can check it out at ProPublica.org/Illinois. Our good friend Mick Dumke joins us on the line this morning. Mick, nice to talk to you again, man.
It's always great to talk to you too, Mike. Thanks for getting in touch about this stuff.
You know, I'm just not surprised about anything anymore. And certainly the Chicago City Council, you know, we've ridiculed, I guess, and we've given it grief, and rightfully so. And here we go again. So let's talk about what you wrote here. You've done an extensive piece on City Council committees. So these are the smaller groups in the City Council itself that are comprised of aldermen, things like special events, and they do all kinds of things like, you know, okay signs and all like the nitty gritty work in the city. And, you know, I guess the idealist in me, you know, I like to think that people are always doing important work and the City Council's doing the people's work, but these meetings, these committee meetings, they're kind of quick. Not everybody shows up. Tell us exactly why you decided to focus on the committees in the City Council.
Well, first of all, you're right about the committees. And just to remind everybody who isn't as nerdy about politics as maybe you and I are, that every level of government, the legislative bodies at every level of government have a committee system of one sort. In short, it's to sort of vet legislation and to provide government oversight. And your summary was exactly right. Both of those things are in short supply at the Chicago City Council through the committee system, which largely at this point exists to rush through legislation, advance the mayor's agenda, and offer perks to the aldermen who are running the committees.
Yeah. So if you are a committee chair, that's a coveted position. And the mayor, I mean, let's be honest, the mayor appoints the chairs of these different committees, even though technically they're the City Council itself is supposed to choose the chairs. But the perks you're talking about, I mean, you get more staff, you get more money to play with. And when I say play with, they are playing with this money, because not all of the money that these different committees get, these aldermen who run the committees, they're not necessarily spending that money on committee work. They do it for other stuff.
That's exactly right. And then to your first point about the mayor basically seizing control of the committee appointment process. Well, imagine if Donald Trump were given control of deciding who is going to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives, he sure wouldn't pick Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
And so, you know, it's usually up to the members and in legislative bodies where there are at least two parties involved. It's the party that has the most seats. They're the ones who really drive the leadership of both, you know, the speaker's job as well as the committee leaders. But in Chicago for decades, this has been something that the aldermen have basically given over to the mayor to decide. So as you might expect, it's usually people who are loyal to the mayor who end up in the most coveted committee chair spots. And you're right, Mike, they have budgets ranging from around $100,000 a year up to a couple million dollars plus. And it's supposed to be doing the work we talked about a couple minutes ago, vetting legislation, making sure you have the staff and the resources to vet legislation to provide government oversight. So the city council on a smaller scale has budgets to do that kind of work, and they're just not doing it. They use the money to hire employees who in a lot of instances are doing clerical work, or they're just simply doing work to help the aldermen back in their wards. And then sometimes the aldermen dip into these funds for other expenses, which are clearly not for committee work, that are more helping them either in their capacity as aldermen or just simply making their lives better.
You interviewed a few aldermen for this piece, and what was astounding to me is that the aldermen, they don't seem to see a problem with any of this. They're like, yeah, no, we need to keep these people busy that are on my staff. So, yeah, we're going to use the money so they can do this and this and maybe put the word out about that. Not necessarily what they're supposed to be doing, what the committee is about. And they don't seem to have any issue with this. It's amazing.
It is amazing. They're upfront about the fact that their committee employees are doing other kinds of work. And some of them actually became indignant when I asked them about that. They're like, well, what do you want them to do? Should they just be sitting around? Of course, I'm going to put them to work. It's working for the people. And the point is like, well, they should be doing other kinds of work for government oversight. They should be investigating stuff. They should be. And if you don't need them to do that, then maybe we should talk about the use of funds. I'm certainly not saying that all of these employees are just, you know, sitting around reading the paper, playing video games all day. But it's just very misleading, and it's an unfair system because essentially it's a spoil system, again, for mayoral loyalists. That's the way it ends up going. And you're quite right, Mike. There are aldermen who are basically saying, well, the agendas I get from my committee are all we're just going to rubber stamp it anyway. It all comes from the mayor. So we don't have enough work to do at the committee level. So, you know, I might as well send them back to the ward to help me out there.
Oh.
It's nuts.
You know, you were at committee meetings. You talked to aldermen. The info for the story, did you have to work to get it? It doesn't sound like, you know, any of this is super secretive because this is public knowledge. But were aldermen very forthcoming with the information that you obtained?
Well, some of them are a little defensive at times, but I've been hanging around City Hall off and on for a long time, so they recognize me. I was told by one alderman, you know, I'm not there. I'm certainly not there every day. I work on projects. I'm not a daily beat reporter. So when I started going to a lot of committee meetings for several weeks in a row, a couple months in a row, one alderman said, you know, a lot of people are wondering what you're doing over here, what you're working on. So, you know, people did notice. A couple other reporters who are beat reporters there every day, they noticed and they were making jokes. Okay, Mick, what do you got going? Stuff like that. But you know, Mike, the truth is I like most of the people I write about even in the city council. I like most of them as human beings. So I think in most cases we have respectful conversations. But the issue is just what's going on here politically. Is this the best use of the public money? Is this the are they providing the government oversight they need to? And I think the money is one thing. It's not always a good use of money. But to me, the far more important issue is the fact that we just don't have a legislative branch of government that is fully functioning. It's certainly not on the same plane as the executive branch, as the mayor's office. And I think that really hurts us. Whether you like Rahm Emanuel, whether you like Mayor Daley before him or not, whether you're going to like Lori Lightfoot or not, I hope we can all agree everybody needs to have some accountability. Everybody needs a check on their power. And I think that's what's sorely lacking here.
Well, we'll see how this all continues to unfold. We'll see if there's any sort of move to rein in what's going on here in the Chicago City Council, or if we'll just continue business as usual, because, hey, here we are. Everything is still standing. And some folks are really happy because they've got those committee chairmanships and they've got extra staff and money and some exemptions from the rules. That's how we do it here in Chicago. But check out Mick Dumke's work at ProPublica.org/Illinois. Mick is a reporter at ProPublica, Illinois, really doing some great work. This is a fascinating piece. It's a peek behind the curtain about how things get done in Chicago, who has what. Mick, it's very, very necessary that we keep telling these stories. So thank you for doing this, and get some sleep after this one.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it. I was telling somebody a little earlier that when you work on stuff for a long time, it just seeps in to your brain in a way that you never expect. So I, before we published this week, I was literally having dreams about city council budgets and invoices and things like that. I don't recommend it. It's not a great way to get a lot of rest.
No, so. Go to a beach somewhere. You need to get some distance. Get some distance from City Hall. Mick, it's always a pleasure, man. You stay well. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Boys with brilliance in their eyes, told by ears of life's disenchanting cry.
Did you know that there are 1,428 townships in Illinois? Maybe you live in one. Well, writer Ted McClelland would like to get rid of all of them. He recently wrote a piece on the Chicago Magazine website, chicagomag.com, called "Let's Get Rid of All the Townships." Ted McClelland is a writer for Chicago Magazine, and he joins us today on Outside the Loop. Ted, nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you, too.
So, all right, a township, because you have some strong feelings about townships. It's which you can't say often, I suppose, but you do.
Right. Right.
It's a layer of government, and I want you, if you could, just give us a little bit of history. What a township is, and what exactly does a township do?
Well, they were really established as part of the Northwest Ordinance back in the 18th and 19th centuries as sort of a way to distribute farmland and a very local form of government at a time when people just couldn't get in the car and drive to the county seat. So it made sense to have a township, a form of local government. These townships are 6 miles to a side. So you're maybe 3 or 4 miles away to your township headquarters. But I'd say in modern 21st century Illinois, townships have outlived their usefulness. That right now, all they do is they maintain roads. They provide assistance to the poor and they assess property values. And there's no reason that counties or municipalities can't take over those functions. In fact, Evanston, you've heard of Evanston Township High School.
Yeah.
But there is no longer an Evanston Township because the city of Evanston and the township of Evanston shared the same borders. And so people decided, well, there's no point having two governments within the same borders, so they voted the township out of existence, and the city took over all of its functions, and nobody seems to miss the fact that it's gone. When Chicago, there used to be a Rogers Park Township and a Hyde Park Township and a Lakeview Township, and when Chicago annexed all those passed out of existence. But in the suburbs, townships exist on top of municipalities, and there are 51 square miles of unincorporated township land in Cook County, including there's this little tiny piece on the northwest side, this little hole in the map, and it's actually Norwood Park Township. It's actually where John Wayne Gacy used to live.
Yeah.
And he was on the Norwood Park Township's street lighting commission. Talk about excessive, unnecessary layers of government. And so, though I know Toni Preckwinkle said when she took office, she wanted to get rid of all those, have them all incorporated, but they're all still here. And those have to be patrolled by the county sheriff's office. So they're basically freeloading police protection off of all the other taxpayers of Cook County.
I mean, it's amazing that these things still exist. But then on the other hand, I think to myself, no, you know, it's the state, it's the county, it's the city. Right. This stuff happens a lot. And I know that you're saying that this is another layer of government and the functions of townships that you laid out there. I mean, those are pretty important, but you're saying that municipalities can do just those things. And what I found amazing by reading your piece is that townships can really be a source of patronage. They even have own lobbying group in Springfield.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many of them. I mean, they're one reason that Illinois has more local taxing bodies than any other state. And you look at, I think I was looking at a couple of state senators. There was Senator Viverito when he was a state senator. He was also on a Stickney Township supervisor. And I think Senator Landeck, he started out on the, God, I can't even remember the name of the township. Might have been Lyons Township, the road commission. And they were responsible for maintaining 20 miles of roads because that was all the unincorporated land in Lyons Township. So it was a way for him to climb the political ladder.
It just seems that to have these townships, it is a little unnecessary. And I feel like we should have maybe gotten rid of these earlier, like we're saying, you know, they do some good things, but cities and municipalities and local governments can do these things. And ultimately, this is a more of a burden on everyone else, isn't it?
Well, there's a bill in the legislature to allow McHenry County townships to dissolve themselves. But why limit it to one county? Why not give every township in the state an opportunity to dissolve itself, or even maybe in a downstate county combine with other townships? And you know, anything to reduce the number of governments and the number of taxing bodies we have. You know, I say that, you know, this would, getting rid of these would mean less government and lower taxes. And who doesn't want less government and lower taxes?
Yeah, I feel like this is, I don't know, the low hanging fruit. I mean, why hasn't this been done already? You said that Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle has said that she wanted to get rid of these. They're still here. You said that there is a bill now in the state legislature. Townships still exist. I mean, this is almost like, this is a no brainer, people.
Well, you know, as you said, you know, it's a form of patronage for a lot of people. And, you know, once bureaucracies tend to perpetuate themselves. You know, once a form of government exists, people find reasons for its continued existence. And so, you know, we have these, you know, as you said, we have the Illinois Township Association there in Springfield lobbying for the continued existence of townships. But I don't think it's anything, if we were setting up the state today, there's no chance that, you know, we would have established all of these townships.
You also write that Illinois, according to USA Today, has the fifth worst tax burden in the nation. So again, to politicians, I feel like, why aren't we just getting rid of this? I mean, this is a great thing to run on.
Sure. I mean, and that's what I think it's Representative Franks in McHenry County. I mean, he seems to be the only guy in the state who is really taking on this this issue. But as you said, you know, it's not a scintillating issue. I think a lot of people aren't even aware that townships exist. And, you know, because in a lot of cases, they exist right on top of, they overlap municipalities. And, you know, if they do know they exist, they don't know what they do. So these things kind of fly under the radar.
Yeah. And you said that there's a little bit of movement in Springfield. Do you have any outlook on what the future of that movement is?
Even if this passes, the local townships in McHenry County, you know, still would have to vote themselves out of existence. So, you know, and only one, I think when Evanston Township did it, it was the only time since 1932 or 34 that an Illinois township had voted itself out of existence. So, as you said, there hasn't been a lot of movement on this.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens with,
with
townships.
We'll check back in 10 years. And I know when Mitch Daniels was governor of Indiana, he wanted to get rid of the townships. And I think that there were like 1,006. And by the time he was done, there were 1,004. So he wasn't able to make much progress either.
Yeah, so not the easiest thing to do, but right. Hey, I guess any forward progress is progress. Well,
right.
You could check out what Ted McClelland is writing. Just go to chicagomag.com. His piece called Let's Get Rid of All the Townships. There's all 1,428 of them. It's up at chicagomag.com. Ted, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Life in a never, never land. Slow your roll, you ain't forever, man. All you would ever do is lie. Ever again, so hang out to dry. Oh, I fled the truth.
A proposed bill in the Illinois state legislature would require more than double the state's fuel tax and would increase the fee for registering an electric car in the state from $17.50 to $1,000. This has a few of us upset at that price increase, especially those who have decided to spend the money and invest in an electric vehicle. With us to discuss this and the possible benefits of electric vehicles in our state is David Collada. He is the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board. It's the state's leading nonprofit utility watchdog. David joins us on the phone this morning. David, nice to talk to you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. So let's talk about this, focusing on the electric vehicle part of this whole thing. Back in, I believe it was March, you put out a report that found consumers could actually see a lot of benefits on their electric bills by the year 2030 if some policies were put in place regarding electric vehicles. Tell us a little bit about what you found out.
Yeah, basically, if as long as we have smart policies that get out ahead of transportation electrification, if we have those smart policies, there are over $2 billion in cumulative consumer benefits that could result. Essentially, the reason why is because if cars charge when costs are low and the grid isn't being used and don't charge when there's a lot of demand on the system, you're essentially providing almost like a battery resource to the grid itself. And that results in lower bills for consumers and also lower rates for consumers if we do it right. Now, this won't happen automatically. The key is to make sure that the charging is managed and is optimized and is integrated into our electric grid. But if you do that, and we can do that, then there are benefits for all electric consumers, even those who don't drive or own an EV. So we're encouraged by that. It's something that, like I said, won't happen automatically, but we think with good policy that EVs could help lower electric bills for consumers.
Now, when you talk about EVs or electric vehicles, that's not the same thing as talking about hybrids, right?
Well, hybrids are obviously part electric, so they're part of the equation. But I think the big benefits will come from full electric vehicles. We're still in the early days of transportation electrification, but the costs of batteries keep coming down. If you look year over year, the sales growth is quite substantial. It was 90% last year in Illinois. And there are countries like China where they have real huge air pollution problems that just simply can't continue to have their citizens buy gas-powered vehicles. They'll literally choke to death. So you're going to, I think, see in transportation increasingly electrify, and the cars are great. They're much faster and they handle well. And there is this opportunity that if we have smart policy, it can provide benefits to our electrical grid, because essentially every car is a battery. And if you optimize when the cars charge and you do it right, it can lower costs for everyone. So we wanted to get out there with that message. As a consumer group, our biggest interest is making sure that consumers have opportunities to save. We want to make sure that there is this real opportunity. It's a challenge if we don't get the policy right. There are some things that we have to do to encourage managed and optimized charging, but they're relatively simple things, and we're encouraging policymakers to implement them.
It's getting the policy stuff right. I mean, that's the tricky part in all this, because there are elected officials who need to be on board with this to craft these policies that are friendly to what you're talking about. There are approximately 15,000 electric vehicles in Illinois, and looking at the process here, the political process. I mean, has there been a shift from where you sit, David, about some elected officials saying, you know what, I wasn't on board before, but now I can see the possible benefits of EV in Illinois, and now I'm going to work on maybe crafting legislation that is favorable to that?
I think we are increasingly starting to see legislators get engaged in this issue. I do think that that in general, people are excited about the benefits that transportation electrification can bring. There are a lot of complicated policies to work out, but we've been involved in discussions in Springfield here for the last year, and you know we sense an encouraging trend. You know, at the same token, there are proposals out there to significantly increase fees for EV owners. That quite frankly, the initial proposals are punishing, and we don't think they can possibly be justified. So it's a little bit schizophrenic. I think in general, there's a fair amount of momentum.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. So up from this proposal, up from $17.50 for the registration fee as it currently stands to $1,000. That's quite the jump.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to think that you talk about punishing. I mean, boy, like I feel like people that get these cars, look, they want to invest in the environment. They want to do something that they feel is their contribution. If they need a car, this is an electric car. And now it's like those people are almost being punished.
Yeah, I think it's the $1,000 proposal. We hope it's not serious. We do believe that that it's not likely to be $1,000. I do think it sends the absolutely the wrong signal. EVs provide a lot of environmental benefit. It's a very important technology. I think the world will move towards more and more electric cars, and it's important that U.S. manufacturers stay competitive in that area. And so putting that kind of fee on EV drivers, I think, is just absolutely the wrong way to go. And it's a huge percentage increase when you go from 17 to 1,000. You know, I think it is true that, of course, EVs use the road too, and so it's important that EV drivers pay their fair share for that, and they don't pay a gas tax because, of course, you don't need gas. They pay electric taxes, but that doesn't necessarily go to the road.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to give you an idea of the scale here, it's our understanding that essentially the average driver pays somewhere about $80 to $100 a year in gas taxes. So, maybe $17 is too low. But $1,000 is just quite frankly ridiculous, and so finding a proposal that that is fair, that treats EV drivers the same because they do use the road, but isn't punishing and takes into account the real social benefits, the benefits to the climate with a lot less pollution, the benefits to the electrical grid. If we do this right, there are real benefits for all consumers, even those who don't own an EV, because you can integrate it into our electrical system in a way that it helps reduce costs. So, we think any fee proposal should take those societal benefits into account as well. And we're certainly willing to work on this issue. We recognize that there needs to be some level of investment in the roads that you're driving on, and perhaps $17 isn't it, but like I said, the average consumer, right, average driver right now pays about $85 to $100 a year in gas taxes. So something along those lines seems a lot fairer than $1,000, let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, check out citizensutilityboard.org for all of the great work that the Citizens Utility Board is up to, especially when it comes to looking at the possible benefits of electric vehicles here in our state. David Collada is the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board. David, thanks for talking to us today. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Deserts and oasis, paradise always. Come
rap party.
Here we go, the rap party for Outside the Loop 657. Recapping the show. And Colin, I'll tell you what, do you live in a township?
I don't live in a township, but our listeners definitely live in some townships, or we hit some townships. We got a lot of interesting and good points to add to the conversation.
That's right. So we got some texts in the studio.
Some calls as well.
Yes. Oh, that's right. You talked to some of the folks.
I do occasionally pick up the phone on this program.
On occasion. Let's be honest. And these folks were maybe, you know, saying, hey, there's a couple points you might want to consider when thinking about townships, especially if you live in a rural area in the state.
Yeah. So had a couple points brought up that if I live in a rural area, a township is the only municipality in maybe unincorporated areas in the southern and central part of the state that do take care of roads. Another point brought up that townships are a lot closer point of contact for citizens of a particular area if their county seat is particularly far away.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought those were interesting points to bring up. It seems like Ted is bringing up a good point in terms of redundancy in densely populated areas.
Right, exactly.
I'm really curious now to actually do a little bit more research into this and see where the differences are in the rural versus urban setting.
Yeah.
It seems to seem like they can provide some, even today, even in 2019, they might be able to still provide some, I don't know, benefits, some conveniences too.
Well, let's not forget, there's also the county government in these rural areas. There's also the county. So the county could do this stuff. And I think the point here is that, okay, townships may be the way it's set up right now in these rural areas. They do some good things. However, could you eliminate the township and put those responsibilities on the county itself, thereby cleaning up the system, maybe saving some money in the long run? And ultimately, this is what we're talking about here, because in Illinois, as we have talked about many times here on this show, has an issue with finances.
It's something to think about. I guess, is there just a current vote of no confidence in counties to do that?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, every government and every piece of local government has its own thing. As we heard this morning from Carpentersville, we all have issues we need to work out. So I don't know. We'll see how this pans out. But the township lobby is definitely in Springfield, so there is support for it. And if they do provide services, is there a way where maybe we could get those services provided by the already established government, thereby reducing the size of government a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be curious if there has ever been a thought to audit the capacity of county governments or these governments that could theoretically take over all these responsibilities that townships, quote unquote, have.
I'm sure people have thought about auditing, but remember, government sometimes doesn't like to check in on what government's doing.
Right. Mick talked about that.
Case in point, the Chicago City Council with these committees. And the committee structure here, so Lori Lightfoot has now put out her recommendations, and it's a recommendation, right? But it's a recommendation that the city council follows about who is going to head these certain committees. And so Mick talked about the power of the executive branch in the city of Chicago and how it sort of dwarfs the legislative branch, and they're supposed to be a check on one another. And these committees, in some cases, have a lot of money with their budgets, and they've got staff, and those staff members and the money doesn't always go to the work that they're supposed to be doing.
But they're working.
But they're working.
I loved that point where some of these aldermen were like, well, I'm going to put these people to work. They're going to do some work. Yeah, but what kind of work are they doing?
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I get frustrated with the aldermen. So a few things on aldermen in Chicago. For the most part, and Colin, you know this, when we try to get an alderman to come on the show, and granted, I know this isn't like nationally syndicated, we do our little thing here, but they have some of the worst community outreach, public relations, media people I've ever seen.
Yeah, they do.
Absolutely terrible.
It's hard to get an alderman, everybody.
And
shock
I know,
of the century.
I know that they don't want to talk a lot of times because they might get questions that are difficult to answer. But I mean, come on. It's not like that across the board, but I'll say this. It's like 98%, I would say. It's very difficult to
get
them.
Yeah, there's a few good ones out there.
But so they don't want to talk. And what Mick, you know, the interviews that he had, I just love that the aldermen were like, yeah, of course. Like, what we're doing is fine. It's very frustrating, Colin, as I'm sure many Chicagoans feel this. We keep electing these people. So at the end of the day, let's look in the mirror and say, do you want this to continue? And maybe some of us do. Maybe some of us say, hey, look, this is the way that it works. This is the system. But boy, if you read that piece, and really go read that piece, there are some financial discrepancies in the budgets for these committees. Where is the money going? No idea. And Mick had a tough time finding out that answer. I mean, he sees that there is discrepancy, but we don't know where the, some of this money is going.
It will be interesting to see if some transparency and redistribution does happen in the coming months.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Do you think you're still going to get that electric car?
Nice segue. Yeah, I am. I am. But it doesn't, it wouldn't apply to this particular proposed tax, which is just amazing. If I get, so I'm planning on getting a Volt, which is not a fully electric vehicle. It's got a gas backup.
Okay.
Doesn't apply to this this tax, which is ridiculous, right? Because it's just how such an obvious money grab this thing is. I could theoretically, I mean, this is why I'm buying it. I don't have to drive more than the battery range covers me for most days. I would
there
say not 90% of my driving is going to be less than 50 miles a day, which is what the battery on the Volt that I'm buying is capable of doing. So because it's not fully electric and it has a gas engine, I don't have to necessarily pay into this, but I'm not going to be buying that much gas. So I'm not contributing to the roads. So if your goal here is to get some sort of like equitable, fair contribution system to road management in Chicago, I'm going to...
Or the state.
Yeah, right. Or the state.
You know.
I'm going to not contribute to that.
And look, I think at some point, I'm fine with everyone contributing something to
well,
the fund.
No. I'm saying it's just this bill. This bill is just attacking... Well, they're bringing up a problem, quote unquote, that, oh, EV vehicles don't contribute to the roads, unlike because they don't pay into the gas tax. Well, let's examine how we're actually funding and supporting roads then, given that we're transferring over to electric vehicles. If you're just going to hike the tax for owning these things and that's your answer, it's just such a poor, poor approach.
Yeah. And look, we need to pay attention to the infrastructure for our transportation system here, roads and cars included. And so, we're still figuring this out. And I think there has been progress. There's been some forward movement. But obviously, we have some things to work out. And as David said, that $1,000 registration fee probably is not going to fly. It probably won't stick. It was a starting point. It got our attention. I don't see how that registration fee continues, but this is something that they're going to have to continue to work out. So I'm sure we will continue to monitor that situation, but we all, let's all chip in for the roads, but let's be sensible about it. And as we are moving towards this electric vehicle economy, which I think is pretty cool, as the technology gets better, hopefully the price comes down for these cars. I think we have to learn to adapt. We have to evolve as we have done. Yes, evolution is a real thing. We have to do that. Do you like how I got the evolution thing in there?
I do. And eventually we'll evolve to just having our cars and all our transportation run on love, Mike.
That's right. Or on Mr. Fusion devices. I like the hover cars, circa 2015 Back to the Future.
Party.
Mike Steven here with you on 720 WGN, wrapping up the 657th edition of Outside the Loop. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Don for doing news. Bob Ferguson is our engineer. Mr. Fix-It Lou Manfredini with House Smarts Radio. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I got some emails about our trip to Ishnala.
Is this okay? Good emails?
Oh, yeah. But now I'm thinking, I see Colin here, and he probably wants to go too.
I guess he does. I guess
and
we
then maybe
take him.
Lindsay wants to go.
Make a little family affair here with all of us?
I mean, they are the producers. And
yeah.
I mean, for me, it's the whole thing about the podcast. But for you, the real carrot here is you're going to interview people for your show that you're doing right now.
Well, right.
Right? So that's like the thing. We're going to make this. I'm targeting the month of July.
Target acquired.
So we're gonna try and figure that out.
Okay, I'm free after like the fourth.
The summer works for you too, right?
That's good. Let's do it.
Yeah. So I got to work it out with Lindsay too, and I think the four of us we go up there. We have like a road trip.
Oh, that'd be fun,
right?
We can get all kinds of content out of that.
Maybe what we do is we
video
rent
content?
An RV. Right?
Hey, wait a minute. What's the that old car is worth money. Can't we get a car from them? You know,
then we
Victory
just
Auto
leave,
Wreckers.
We could just leave it up there.
Let's talk to Dean Richards, right? He's the voice of Victory Auto Wreckers. He has been for like 30 years.
See, the wheels are turning.
And it's all coming together.
All we have to do is hit the date, and then we look at it. It's like when I used to build houses, right? I never missed a closing date. So once we have the date, then we build everything around it.
We call that synergy. That's what we call it. Have a great week. Thank you so much again for listening to the show. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.